On the football field, the action happens in the blink of an eye. It's like that off the field too when you've been injured. In a split second, your life is changed. Whether on the field or in the courtroom, when you've been injured, you need the right teammates by your side. You need Chase and Boscolo, a law firm willing to protect and fight for your rights. On the football field or in the courtroom, having the right team determines whether you win or lose. When injuries change your life, call Chase and Boscolo, trial lawyers that care.
Oarsman opened its first car dealership in 1921. Now, over 100 years and many dealerships later, Oarsman of Virginia can proudly say that when it comes to your car buying needs, if you want it, we've got it. Saving, selection, and service? Check. Lifetime engine guarantees and car washes? Check. Loaner cars and free Virginia inspections? Check and check. See, over the past 100 years, we've learned that to succeed in business, we've got to keep our customers happy. And that's the Oarsman story.
Oarsman Chevy Buick GMC. Let's ride together.
Hey guys, what's up? This is Josh Norman.
This is Alex Smith.
This is Joe Gibbs.
You listen to Redskins Talk
with JP Finley.
What up, everybody? JP Finley, Redskins Talk Podcast. Very exciting guest we got coming on. We teased the oral history of the 91 season a few episodes back. Today will be the first edition, and we swung and got a hit. We went all the way to the top. We got the Super Bowl MVP. Mark Rippon comes on to share his thoughts, what he remembers from really just a dominant year. I'm in the podcast studio. Taylor's here with me. What's up, dude?
Hey, doing good.
What do you think of this chair?
This chair?
Yeah.
Chair's fine.
All right. Pete is here. Pete had no idea who Mark Rippon was. All right. We're not going to waste any time. We're going right to Mark Rippon. Mitch Tischler is supposed to be here. He is not here. Word is he's stuck in an elevator in our office building. So if assuming Mitch ever arrives after the Mark Rippon interview, we're going to figure out what the hell happened to the big man. Right now, though, we are going to Mark Rippon. Here we go.
Oarsman opened its first car dealership in 1921. Now, over 100 years and many dealerships later, Oarsman of Virginia can proudly say that when it comes to your car buying needs, if you want it, we've got it. Saving, selection, and service? Check. Lifetime engine guarantees and car washes? Check. Loaner cars and free Virginia inspections? Check and check. See, over the past 100 years, we've learned that to succeed in business, we've got to keep our customers happy. And that's the Oarsman story.
Oarsman Ford Lincoln. Let's ride together.
Oarsman opened its first car dealership in 1921. Now, over 100 years and many dealerships later, Oarsman of Virginia can proudly say that when it comes to your car buying needs, if you want it, we've got it. Saving, selection, and service? Check. Lifetime engine guarantees and car washes? Check. Loaner cars and free Virginia inspections? Check and check. See, over the past 100 years, we've learned that to succeed in business, we've got to keep our customers happy. And that's the Oarsman story.
Oarsman Chantilly Kia. Let's ride together.
It is a very sincere honor to have Mark Rippon on the Redskins Talk Podcast with us now. Mark, how you doing, man?
Excellent, JP. Yourself?
I am doing well. Last time I saw you, we were in a rainstorm on the Eastern Shore. How did you fare in your golf tournament and the Mickey Steele golf tournament? You guys raised a ton of money for a great cause.
Well, first and foremost, do something for two great causes, my foundation and then Maryland Special Olympics. It was an honor to be back there and honor my good friend, Mickey, who died of leukemia a little over 10 years ago. It was awesome, actually. Interestingly enough, over half the field played 18 holes.
Really? I did not. So sorry.
Yeah. Well, you're one of the smarter ones.
It was boring, man.
Yeah. Yeah. It was definitely British Open conditions.
Right. B. Mitch has been calling me a wimp nonstop, by the way. So you'd be happy to know.
B. Mitch just got back from him and Chick went to over to Scotland and played, and he said, "Are you kidding me? This is like a warm day."
So, right.
We got it in, and obviously great to see all my old teammates.
You had a great turnout.
Yep, some of the guys who played before me, some of the guys who played after me, and just a wonderful gathering of people who are very caring.
One of the coolest moments I had playing that morning was in kind of the pre-round reception. The governor of Maryland, Larry Hogan, was there, and I took a picture with him, was talking to him for a minute, and it was right after the Supreme Court had, you know, ruled that betting is now legal, sports betting. And and so I asked Governor Hogan, I was like, hey, when's Maryland going to have betting? And he's like, well, you know, the legislature takes some time to move, probably not till 2020. And then he leans in, he's like, but I'll take a bet for you. It was just so funny and down to earth.
Yeah, he is, you know, and a cancer survivor.
Yeah, absolutely.
So definitely a guy who's done great things over in Maryland. And it was so nice to see him and, you know, kick off the event and be a part of it.
Very cool. So I'm not going to ask you the normal, what do you think of Kirk? What do you think of Alex? I pitched a project to B Mitch, and I've talked to Charlie Casserly about it. And I think there's nobody better than you to be our first person on this. We're starting a series called The Oral History of the 1991 Season. And I think now that the Caps have won a Stanley Cup and not everybody's going back to 91 as, you know, the last title in town, I think it can almost be celebrated a little differently. And sure. I think there's nobody to talk to than the quarterback of that team that went 14-2 and just stomped everybody in the playoffs and really was like an all-time great team. So I want to basically leave it as open-ended as you want and tell me kind of when you – let's start it here. When did you think that 1991 team really had a chance to be special?
Well, first of all, thanks to O.V., Niskanen, Holtby, Backstrom, Oshie, all those guys for breaking the curse, you know, that's been haunting a great sports town and a great fan base in Washington, D.C. It's hard to say when. I just know that playing with guys for a long period of time, you get to know their personalities. You get to know their, as you say, in horse talk, their gait, how they go around, how they show themselves. And I think once you kind of understand that this team was, you know, based on a group of guys that did things on and off the field together, did work in the community and charity, trusted each other. You know, there's a lot of really good vibes going into that season. And, I wouldn't say we had a great preseason, and nor do we ever show anything in the preseason other than maybe
lost every game, right? In the preseason.
I'm not sure we lost every game, but I think we show maybe first two or three pages of our playbook. And if we win a game, it's based on just, gosh, our guys are just that much superior and much more, it'd be like Alabama playing, let's say Alabama playing
Maryland, my alma mater, yeah.
Your alma mater and just using the first page of the playbook. It probably can be done, but, that doesn't happen in the NFL in the preseason, and we're very vanilla. We're just not going to show much. And then once the season starts, and plus the addition that they don't have now, I think we had a 35 second play clock to get plays in there, use our shifting motions, multiple formations, maybe just a handful of plays, running plays and passing plays with different formations and such. I think we just had a formula that was came together that year, and a bunch of guys that believed in what we were trying to do. And it was, interestingly enough, our coaching staff challenged us each and every week, almost to the point where they said, okay, let's do this. I guarantee you when we go out for lunch on the first day, they're not going to be able to get this. And sure enough, I mean, we had a lot of smart guys up front, and I'm talking offensively, defensively, Richie and Richie Pettibone and Larry Picatello and Coach Thomas were, you know, same thing, challenging the defense and doing different things that other teams weren't doing. And now defenses are in the NFL today are like mad scientists, you know, with his own blitzes and things like that. But they challenge us. They challenge us as players. They challenge us off the field to do the things you're supposed to do. They challenge us. Dan Riley challenged us in the weight room. Bubba Tyre challenged us in the training room to say, hey, listen, if this is special, we need to get you back on the field, as soon as possible. So go through your treatments. You know, if you got an ankle sprain or something like that, get in there, ice it, do all the things that we need you back out there. And that's the perfect storm you have to have. That's a perfect storm that we did have. We had very little injuries, throughout the season. Our key players were intact, and it was a special week, a special year.
Yeah. Hey, Mark and Trent Chandler, how are you?
Very good. Yourself?
Doing good. Hey, that offensive line that you had that year, allowed to near, I think it's the last game you had the fewest sacks in NFL history. But what was it about that group? You know, it had some original hogs in it. You still had Jacoby, had some newer guys in it. Mark Schlereth, it just, had been around for a few years. What was it about the relationship between those guys and you, and, what made them perform so well?
Well, I just think they you have a core group: Bostic, Jacoby, Grimm, Jim Lachey, and then you have a young fresh blood like Mark Schlereth, Dr. Mark Addix, Ed Simmons, Brownie, Big Brownie. I mean, we had a group of guys that even though Schlereth had only been there a couple of years, he was amongst guys that had been there for two world championships. Arthur, two world championships, and some even a loss in a world championship. So he was in good hands. The communication, Hannifin was, and Joe Bugle before Hannifin, and then Hannifin coming in to take over the reins. The communication was unbelievable. Yeah, and let's just face it, you're only as good as the guys up front, and that's why we were so good. Donnie Warren, John Brandis, Terry Orr.
Touchdown, Terry Orr. That was my guy.
Yep. Terry Orr, Ron Middleton, John Brandis, and of course, Donnie Warren were special guys.
We all know how good the Hogs were, and you brought up the tight ends that did a great job blocking. I want to get into kind of some specific games from that season, and I imagine all of them stick out to you for lots of different reasons, but I'm looking at that Falcons game from early November where you completed 16 passes for 442 yards with 6 touchdowns. You averaged 27 yards a pass. What was going on that day?
Well, I mean, the fact of the matter is that, what's the guy's name that coached Falcons?
Glanville. Yeah, wearing the duster.
Had Deion Sanders, was hurt. Their other corner, McIntyre, I think, was hurt, and they played same press coverage blitz, the whole time. And when you do that, you take a 3-step drop, and I think half you guys could have made a couple of those throws. And pitching,
you're being modest,
catch, pitch and catch where Gary Clark is one on one, Art and Ricky are one on one, and you just take the mismatches and the advantages and make a throw, you got to get the ball out soon. I took some hits that game, based on their philosophy. Their philosophy was try to come and intimidate. They knew that they, were shorthanded on the corners, but they played press coverage, which I thought was not the smartest thing. So a lot of our routes.
Stats would back you up, Mark, that it wasn't the smartest game plan from Jerry Glanville.
Not the smartest game plan. I think if they played off coverage, at least they would have, we had had some completions, but they would have tackled and it would have been a little bit easier on them. But, when you play press coverage, a lot of our press coverage for anyone out there, meaning the guys within the yardie, right on the line of scrimmage, with no help deep, they don't have a free safety that's helping them over the top or anything like that, it's basically our guys are better and we turn our routes that we have and automatically turns into just a go route and it's just pitch and catch.
We
pitched and catched pretty well that day.
You sure did, man. Did you ever have a game like that where 440 yards, 6 TDs?
Oh, no.
Yeah,
no,
I mean, that's crazy.
I think I couldn't even do it on Nintendo or whatever. or Madden football.
Right. And what's crazy is, I mean, that team was a run first team. You had the Hogs and everything. But even the following week, you guys went to Pittsburgh. You stomped the Steelers. And this QB rating is such a weird stat. So your QB rating against the Falcons, where you went for 440 and 6 TDs, was 136.8. The following week, you go to Pittsburgh. You beat the Steelers 41-14, total dominant game. That game, you're 21 of 28, so you complete 75% of your passes for 325 and 2 touchdowns. Still, same QB rating. Which of those two games stands out to you more? Because I can't imagine Pittsburgh was just playing press and blitzing everybody and letting you go over the top.
No, they had Lloyd and Kevin Green, and they had, you know, I mean, and playing in Pittsburgh, you never, you know, come out of Pittsburgh feeling like you, you know, it was going to be an easy game. And that was, of all the times I've been to Pittsburgh, that was probably an opportunity there for us where it seemed easier maybe than it looked. But that was the kind of team we had. I mean, it was a very professional mentality throughout the week, practice-wise, preparation-wise, and execution-wise. And we were on top of our game. And it was I just can't reiterate enough that not that Tony Kornheiser's jump on the bandwagon. I think we started jumping on that bandwagon all along with it, as did the whole city.
You got Mark. You guys, you know, had some, it wasn't all easy for you guys that year. You went down early in some games, had to come back. But if there was one quality, you know, obviously the Redskins have not done as well since. If there's one quality you could transfer from that 1991 team that you think might be missing from the Redskins of the last, you know, 5-10 years, what would that be?
Well, hard to say. I don't think we, you know, even if we did feel that we were getting the better of us at halftime, I think one of the fundamentals of Joe Gibbs, and one of the great reasons why he's a Hall of Fame coach, and is his ability to adjust at halftime. There's many instances in games where we didn't play as well, and maybe things didn't go as well as we wanted the first half. And he was a genius. He was a master at changing things up and saying, okay, well, this is not working. Let's go to this, and this. And I think we got a better chance to attack them here, and here. And that's kind of what we did. And execution and playmaking, you know, again, I can't tell you enough what our defense did to get us the ball back. And that's what everyone says. You got to have, you know, three phases of your game that plays at the top level. And we had all three play at a very high level. Our defense was, you know, they were phenomenal. We ran the football, which inevitably gave us opportunities to bring safeties into the mix. You put safeties into the mix, you got one-on-one coverage on the outside, and I'm going to take one-on-one coverage on the outside with Art and Gary all day long. And then when you start going too deep, you got Ricky down the middle. So it's just they didn't have an answer. Teams did not have an answer for us. And if they did, and they had a half that was pretty good, we had an answer back for them. And inevitably, we shut things down in the last week against Philadelphia after we took the lead. And you know, they beat us in a close game there. And we lost in kind of a deflected ball right at the goal line to Ricky to beat the Cowboys at home. And also, we also knew that that was a pretty special team we were playing at that point in time, that they were going to be pretty good. And ended up being pretty good. Right. So, that was not something that us as players, we felt, you know, losing to Dallas was horrible. You never want to lose to Dallas anywhere, whether it's Poland or RFK, you know, but RFK may be the worst place you could lose to Dallas at, but that was a good football team. And again, Philadelphia was Philadelphia. We shut things down at halftime and kind of said, let's get ready for a run at it, and had a good run in the, not only a good run, but, you know, we just literally kind of ran through the playoffs without many problems, and then won the Super Bowl with not many problems at all. And when you look at the history of the National Football League and you talk about the greatest teams statistic wise, you might say people, names like Montana, Brady, things like that. But as far as dominance throughout a whole season, a season of just dominance, that team has to be considered, if not the greatest team in the history of the NFL as far as dominance.
From that Super Bowl, which was like 27 plus years ago, what is the, you know, I'm sure the memories are kind of fading, but what's one thing, maybe one feeling, one moment that you really remember from that game that is kind of your signature for that game?
Well, I wouldn't say the signature for us. I just think the one thing that we all remember is the Atlanta playoff game.
That's what I wanted to ask about.
Yeah. That's just kind of special. You know, I mean, they talk about the stomping of the Dallas. We want, you know, I mean, years before I was there and the stomping of the bleachers, you know, and the place just shaking. And then we had games like that too, where, you know, it was difficult. You know, Chris Miller said, and Billy Joe Tolliver said, it was hard to play in that little stadium, you know. It was difficult to play there. It was loud, and for a small stadium, it was loud, noisy, and muddy, and it was everything you wanted in football, yet everything that you didn't want to be on the opposition against. And so I think the seat cushion game, the seats flying out of there, as far as the throw, I think the throw to, you know, Gary to solidify the Super Bowl in 26, and then the sprint right bomb to Gary in the Detroit game, where I rolled out to the right and threw back to the left, where Ricky ran a deep in against cover two, and the safety bit on him, and Gary kind of ran down the sideline and hit him. It was the same one we hit earlier in the season against the Giants.
That Monday night game.
The Monday night game. Gary dropped one in that game. We came back to it later on and got it. So it was, and that was important because that's a team we struggled with. We struggled with for previous four seasons. I think they won six of seven games coming into that, or maybe six straight coming into that. So,
I mean, that's an organization the Skins have struggled against going up to the Meadowlands. I mean, for decades.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. So to do that up there, I think that was now that I look back on it, that was, I think, not for the players as much. I think for the coaching staff, that was like, all right, maybe we got something here. You know, this might be something special, because we came back to that same play. I rolled to the right and threw to the left. And then the second one where he got the touchdown against Everson Walls, I rolled to the left and threw back to the right, which we never practiced. You know, we never did it to the left. So it was kind of an odd thing where you rolled to the left. I got to flip my hips around to throw back to the right. I had to get a lot on it. I did. And a lot of people don't know against, I think a touchdown pass I threw against, I wanted to say the Giants or someone. It was earlier, and I broke a thumb, hit it on a helmet or something.
I remember that. Finger, yeah.
But yeah. Anyways, there's a lot of things that happened, but you know, and then, you know, to have that, to have that, I think, to beat the Giants in the Meadowlands, I think that might, I after going through all these different things, memories and such, you know, my head not all being there. it's really cool to see that might have been the turning point to say, hey, we got something special.
17-13 win just about Halloween in 1991. Mark, your time is very valuable, and I still got to ask you about the golf tournament coming up. But I was wondering if you can do me a favor. We have a millennial on the podcast. His name is Pete. He is convinced that nothing cool happened before Twitter was invented. So if for a guy named Pete, who's 22, how old are you, Pete?
23, Mark, and JP is kind of setting me up here, but yeah, whatever he's going for, let's see what he says.
So Pete just doesn't get what it was like when your team was running through the NFL.
Yeah, my highlight is Mark Brunell in 2005 going 9-7 against like bad Bears teams. It's a little different.
So if you can, and this is kind of cool for me because we just saw how crazy the city went for the Caps. How crazy was this town for your Redskins teams throughout your time, but especially that 91 team?
And, you know, it's incomprehensible. I mean, first of all, I mean, the town for the Caps is just, you could just see this town is just dying for a champion. And it just all, you know, just all came together. I mean, when you fill a stadium, when you're away playing in Vegas and you fill your own arena and you have people filling the streets and there's not a pub, a restaurant, a bar in town that doesn't have somebody in a red uniform, watching the games. I mean, there were Dexter Manley shirts, Charles Mann shirts. There were, you know, Daryl Green shirts. There were, you know, Art Monk shirts, Gary Clark shirts, everywhere throughout DC, coming to tailgating, shopping malls. I mean, you couldn't, you know, even, you know, I mean, I couldn't imagine what it was like to be Michael Jordan, and I couldn't imagine what it's like to be Michael Jordan today. But if you're a Redskin ball player back in the day when all that was going on, and here's the other thing that people forget to remember, or people don't remember, is that if we didn't make the playoffs, oh my goodness, you know, there were some angry fans. If we didn't go deep into the playoffs, it was like, okay, all right, we can do better than that. And if we, you know, anything less than a Super Bowl, was unacceptable. That was a standard, and that was the culture in the 80s and up until that 91-92 team. And that 91-92 team, take away nothing from those other Super Bowl teams. Maybe the greatest Redskin, one of the greatest Redskin teams ever, statistic-wise, was the one that lost the Super Bowl. Plus-minus turnover ratio was back in 80.
43, I think it was.
Yep. That was incredible. That was an incredible team. But they didn't win it all. So, I mean, incredible only happens if you win it. And take nothing away from those other two Super Bowls, but our Super Bowl team was the only Super Bowl team the Redskins had in a regular 16-game schedule. The other were both in work stoppages. And
all right.
And so that was important to those guys. That was important to those guys who'd been there for the first two, you know, to put three rings on and to say, hey, you know, there would have been an asterisk behind it saying, hey, you didn't do it in a 16-game schedule. Yeah, great. You guys were great when work stoppage came about. No. We did it when it mattered the most in 16 games and got it done and in style.
Indeed.
Yeah, those expectations you touched on is something B-Mitch is always saying. We try and give Gruden credit for stabilizing the Redskins, and he's like, what do you mean this is stable? They're going 8, 7, 9 wins a year. We used to talk about Super Bowls all the time around this town. What is wrong with you people? So you're on the same page with him when it comes to that.
It's basically what is wrong with you, Pete.
Yeah.
Mark. Yeah, exactly. I think that. Yeah. Hey, listen. Hey, let's come on. You know, we're doing good. We got 9 wins.
Yeah.
People should like be, you know,
flipping cars over.
Should be on the line. Not, you know, people should be like, hey, where's the accountability here? And, you know, and I'm sure that, you know, they're turning things around, and I like Alex. I think Alex brings some stability to this, accountability in what he's done. He's a true professional on and off the field. And, so I think that, you're going to see some great things out of him. I can't wait. He's a wonderful, wonderful guy. I enjoy seeing him Lake Tahoe every year in the golf tournament. I'll see him again this year. And, I think he's going to do great things. I think more importantly, we need someone to beat Dallas, you know, and right. Kirk struggled to do so. And I think Kirk did a lot of great things. And again, off the field, maybe you couldn't ask for a better guy and represent the organization. But from a standpoint of winning playoff games, he fell short. And, you know, you got to move on. You know, I mean, my neck was on the line that 91-92 season. I actually held out that year. I don't know if you remember.
Oh, yeah.
I won my first playoff game against the Eagles. And we lost, I left my heart in San Francisco. And then the year after 92, I left my heart in San Francisco as I left the ball on B. Mitch's chest and, you know, didn't secure the ball. And we fumbled as we should have actually been going to play in the NFC Championship game that year too. So that was, even though it wasn't the greatest year statistically, we managed to, should have beat San Francisco in San Francisco to play Dallas in Dallas, you know, and
that would have been wild.
Yeah.
Well, Mark, you gave me the perfect segue just to ask about the golf tournament coming up in Tahoe, the American Century Championship. You're a great golfer. I know you're excited. This thing raises a ton of money and seems like a lot of fun.
Yeah, we have raised a little over, you know, 20 some odd years. I've been playing 28 of the 29 years. We raised over, you know, $5 million, which, you know, in the PGA Tour, they just, every stop they go to, they leave something, you know, with that city. And that's the same thing we try to do in Tahoe and have some fun while we're doing it. Fishing stories get bigger and bigger each year. And you got to meet new people. Natalie Gulbis is playing this year. So it'll be good to see her game. The year that I won 3 years ago, Annika Sorenstam, you know, was in the hunt. She finished second. So it was always good to beat maybe arguably the greatest female golfer of all time.
Right.
So it's a great event. And
does Barkley play in that thing?
Every year, and he's the best.
What is his swing like in person?
You don't even want to know. But he did. I played with him in the 80s, late 80s, and he actually had a golf swing, but it was really, really good. And he ended up hitting the ball that in a tournament, and he was a little nervous, and it sliced and hit a lady in the head and hurt her pretty bad. And I think that's where he developed this
hitch
or something like that. I don't know if it was in the head, but he hit someone, and and he developed the hitch on his downswing because, like, he's afraid to really go after, you know. So
that's interesting. I didn't know that. Well, Mark, thank you so much for the time.
You bet, you guys.
This has been fantastic. Here. Really appreciate it.
Go Skips.
All right.
Thanks, Mark.
That was very cool listening to Mark Ribbon talk. And to me, he's absolutely right about the dominance that team had and the performance. And they are not talked about in the way they should when you talk about all-time great teams. I think it's because there weren't a lot of stars on that team.
Right.
All right. So there was first episode ever of the oral history of the 1991 Redskins. Sponsors, welcome to that package. You know, you could... And who do we have here? Look at this guy. Mitch Tischler has arrived.
Hey, what's up, boys?
How was, what the hell happened to you, dude?
That was a hot and sweaty 40 minutes in a small
40
box.
40 minutes?
35, 40 minutes, yeah.
Oh my gosh, what happened?
I got in the elevator in our garage in P5 and hit floor 6, which is where our office is, and I was on the way up, and the elevator said L, and it just
You
stopped.
Took an L. You took a big L.
I took a big L.
You have to like press the button.
Does that button work?
I pressed all of the buttons. I was like a little kid. I was like, 2, open door, 3, open door. But they have a little telephone in there, which I've never gotten to use before. I've always wanted to, not in that sense, but just to be a pain in the ass. But I picked up the phone, pressed a little button, and some woman on the other end told me an engineer was, quote, on his way.
How long did it take for said engineer?
About 15, 20 minutes, I got a maintenance worker who went to the bottom of the elevator shaft, and he was talking to me, telling me, reassuring me.
Just shouting up?
Yeah. He had a flashlight that was shining through the door, and he was like, I'm right here, sir. If you have any issues, please let me know. I'm going to be right here with you the whole time.
Except he wasn't there with you. He's not stuck in the goddamn elevator.
Right.
I'm fired up for Mitch. This shouldn't happen.
He was in the elevator shaft, which I'm sure was not any more comfortable than being.
Dude, the elevators in our office building suck.
They're always, like,
they suck.
At best, they suck. And there's 6 elevators, and it seems like usually only 2 of them at tops are working.
No. So the guy got there like 20 minutes later, and he goes, hey, the elevator technician is on his way. He said he's 5 minutes out. And then he goes, but the guy kind of always says he's 5 minutes out. So best of luck. And I was like, oh, God.
What happened? Did you sit down? Like, what do you? You were there a while.
Yeah.
Did you establish?
I didn't sit down.
I don't get service in that elevator.
So what happened was I originally was stuck between P1 and P2 is what he told is where I was when we started. Mm-hmm. After talking for 5 minutes, I lurched upwards a little bit.
And you thought you were free after that. You're like, it's working.
Then I was stuck between P1 and L.
Yeah.
And I was able to get a little bit of cell service when I started slacking and texting you guys.
Oh, man.
And the office and anyone else who would listen, I was throwing out my SOS. Somebody come get me.
Very clearly, we got to be quick because we got to go. Very clearly, Mitch is the best person here suited to be stuck in an elevator. I think.
I would have gotten claustrophobic and probably off
You
myself.
Were like, you're a spaz.
I would have freaked out immediately.
You get scared.
I would have just freaked. I would have lost
Taylor would have had to go to the bathroom.
Yeah.
By the way.
There's no lazy boys in elevators.
The worst part of this was the elevator then started to go and stopped on the second floor and the doors opened, but it was a good 1.5 foot step down to get to the actual second floor.
Did you get off? Hell yeah.
Sorry.
And then did you immediately hop on an elevator?
Yeah, I did. No, I walked around a little bit and got a little airflow going.
You just take the stairs at that point, dude.
So I thought but you can't get into the floor from the stairs. You can only go down. Yeah. I wasn't going to go down and have to get another elevator going.
Right. All right. So stuck in an elevator rankings, I guess I'm after Mitch. I think.
No, you're incredibly impatient.
Impatient, but I can handle. Like yeah, I'm
weird
stuck,
situation.
True.
You would freak out. Taylor would need the bathroom. Who's the worst person to be stuck on an elevator?
Pete.
I think Pete would freak out. I get so claustrophobic too.
And I would start worrying about airflow. I'd like start thinking that I'm running out of oxygen and huffing and puffing.
Your hands get real weird and sweaty a lot anyway. So like,
did you establish a pee corner? Anybody who watches The Office knows if you get stuck in an elevator, you have a pee corner.
As the guy was talking to me, I was like, there's an impending situation coming. So we should probably figure something out.
All right. On that note, it's time for us to go.
Best story ever.
Something for everybody to think about. Pete doesn't know if he's allowed to go to Richmond yet. And we're not telling him one way or the other. So Pete is over here freaking out.
Speaking of things that make me nervous. Yeah.
All right. Thank you guys for listening. Big thank you to Mark Rippon.
Yep.
That was so cool to have him. you know, the 9-year-old kid in me would flip out if I, well, A, if I knew what a podcast was when I was 9 years old, but two, that I got to talk to Mark Rippon. I hope you guys enjoyed that. There'll be much more Oral History of 91 down the road. And Mitch, we're glad to have you back, buddy. Glad you made it out.
Glad I made it, guys.
JP, good job on the oral history. That was a good first installment. I'm glad your idea is coming to fruition.
Thanks, Pete. I have so many ideas that never come to fruition, so here we go. All right, if you made it this far, owe you a beer.
Oarsman opened its first car dealership in 1921. Now, over 100 years and many dealerships later, Oarsman of Virginia can proudly say that when it comes to your car buying needs, if you want it, we've got it. Saving, selection, and service? Check. Lifetime engine guarantees? Check. Loaner cars and free car washes? Check and check. See, over the past 100 years, we've learned that to succeed in business, we've got to keep our customers happy. And that's the Oarsman story.
Oarsman, Kia of Alexandria. Let's ride together.
What Makes You Smile is brought to you by Dominion National. For anyone that needs dental and vision benefits, I have a one-stop shop for you. TeethKeeperSave.com. TeethKeeperSave.com offers dental and vision benefits for everyone with plans starting under $7 a month. Don't have benefits through your employer? Are you self-employed and need dental and vision benefits? TeethKeeperSave.com has various plans for individuals to choose from. Visit TeethKeeperSave.com today and enroll in minutes.